This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All fellows with monkey sounds in there and called good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Hey, welcome in. Danny and Dusty, and this is a split show edition. This is going to be the new Wednesday normal for us right now. I am down in Autzen Stadium right now. I'm overlooking the Oregon Ducks football field in Autzen Stadium. I see the Welcome to Autzen sign. I see the Coburg Hills off into the distance. I've got it all going right here at Autzen Stadium because I'm down at Oregon Ducks practice on Wednesdays for my sideline responsibilities.
Hey.
And you are still in the cage. They don't let the orangutan out of the cage, my man.
No, you keep it in the zoo.
Yeah, you can't be trusted to be walking right. Last time you walked around this stadium, you ended up injured. You tore your hamstring.
Yeah, I was literally walking around the stadium, not actually in the stadium. It was around the stadium or to the stadium, to be more succinct.
But we will still party on. I can see you guys. You guys can see me. For the YouTube party animals at youtube.com/1080aimthefan, there will be a time where we will get the YouTube stream to travel down here with me, and we'll have a little camera up so you guys can see all the goings-on of this. I mean, it's a great view, but there's not a lot of action. But you'll be able to see me soon enough. It'll be okay.
Just baby steps. Just working through the kinks.
That's right. That's right. That's right. How's your wrestling Wednesday starting off, Mr. Murray?
Not too bad. Just minor technical issues up here as I cannot connect to our little Google Meet because, you know, why would anything work normally? But other than that, we're doing pretty good.
Wow. And apparently, Orange O Guy already in on the Vancouver Ford text line 503-864-6326. He is our wrestling go-to.
Indeed.
And we do need to honor at some point today Rust, Psycho Sid, RIP. But he is already in with Happy Bash in Berlin Wrestling Wednesday.
That's a very, very deep cut, I feel like.
I feel like the Bash in Berlin, I'm just like WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Monday Night Raw. That's SmackDown. You got that?
Yeah. The only time I'm
bashing.
I don't
go outside.
Yeah, no, other than that. Like, anytime I'm bashing anything in Berlin, I'm going full World War II.
Wow.
Well,
okay.
I mean,
that
come on.
Aggressive, but totally on brand.
I mean, is it that aggressive?
We're not to that point yet. We're still not over that.
Yeah, we're still like. I think our generation's probably the last generation because we knew people that were in World War II. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, we met some people that had fought in World War II. So, you're absolutely correct.
So, like, there's that kind of, like, lingering hatred along with the generational time periods. Like, we don't think about World War I or the Civil War or Revolutionary War. Like, we laugh, you know, we kind of laugh about it. You know, South sucks, England sucks, but, you know. But it's not, there's not, like, a real vitriol or hatred for the Brits or the South in the sense of like,
no, we got over that.
Yeah, no, you're done. Like, hey, Germany, we still kind of look at like, let's chill out on things, okay?
Yeah, they still need to be checked. But hey, that reminds me when you said, you know, the Brits there. Have you seen the new Wyatt Earp series on Netflix?
No.
Have you checked?
Did they try to make him British?
No. No, they didn't try to make Wyatt Earp British. No, it's like it's a docuseries where they do like the reenactment type stuff. It's actually really well done. But they bounce back and forth, and they basically give all of the background to the shootout at the OK Corral and kind of who Wyatt Earp was and why it was such a big deal and led to that. It's really fascinating. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but the Brits were actually played a role in the shootout at the OK Corral, which I had no idea about until watching this documentary.
I refuse to believe that Brits made it that far west.
Well, no, you're going to have to watch it. It's about
does it have Kurt Russell or Val Kilmer?
Neither one of those guys are in it.
Sam Elliott?
No, he's also not in it. But the actors are good. You're going to like it because it paints Wyatt Earp in a different light than Kurt Russell did. That's for sure.
I mean, he wasn't a good dude.
Wyatt Earp?
Yeah.
No.
He was not a good dude. I mean,
now this is something that I had heard before, but they go over it in the documentary, so this shouldn't be a spoiler to anybody. But like the movie Tombstone kind of paints him as like this by the book lawman, right?
Yeah, no, he wasn't.
He was a dude that broke every said rule. He did not like to use guns, but the reason why he didn't use his gun very often is because he would just walk up to a criminal and just say, "Are you so-and-so?" and then punch them in the face and then drag them to jail.
Yes.
That was more of his style, which that is not the guy that we saw from Tombstone.
No.
But it tells the story of why the U.S. dollar was trying to make its way back after the Civil War, and Tombstone had played a massive role in that.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's really good. You are a history buff. Yes. You would like it.
It's the Secret Service part of it, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're also a violence sicko.
I am.
And so you would also like it because there's plenty of that.
My algorithm on social media is tuned just perfectly now to where, like, once every couple days a fight gets thrown in there.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
Whether it's like a street fight or, you know, a military action. It's like a little Emeril Lagasse, bam, into my social media feed.
I'm not sure I want anything Wyatt Earp related that doesn't involve Sam Elliott.
We're all just grist for the mill.
God.
That's right. Yeah.
Tombstone is one of my favorite. Tombstone is the movie I've seen more than any other movie. It's not particularly close.
It's a good movie. Yeah,
It's the most rewatchable movie of all time. You can put it on in the background and just be totally fine. Every now and then you're working on something, or it's just people are around. You'll throw a line will come up and you'll say alongside the TV, and then you go back to whatever you're doing.
Boy, you're not wrong about that.
It's perfect.
But all we get is like Shawshank and Con Air. Like, why not throw in a little Tombstone on TNT on that rainy Sunday?
That's where the change is, though. It's the Marvel movies now. You have
Spider-Man is all day, every day.
I am totally okay with Marvel movies being the new Tombstone replacement. I am okay with that. There's a lot of good lines. You can get in and out of it. You can pop back in if you want to turn your brain off for a few minutes. I'm one of those absolute lunatics who...
No way.
Yeah, I know. They can just stop right there. When I sit down to write, if I'm writing an article for the Patreon or something like that, I've got three monitors, right? And one of the monitors will be on a TV show. I'll just like put whatever, like I'll load in my Xfinity app or whatever and find a TV show that I can just like kind of leave on. And then one monitor will be nothing but whatever research or videos or game film that I'm watching. And the middle monitor will be whatever I'm writing. And I will sit down and I will do this for like, when I write, I'll sit down for like 4 or 5 hours at a time and just kind of go into my own little world. And I will just pivot to the monitor to the left and turn my brain off for 10 minutes. And like whatever show is there, I will just watch. And Marvel movies are so perfect for that. You can just cop in and out of them without any hesitation whatsoever.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. The Vancouver Ford text line saying I have robot voice right now.
You're it's cleaning up.
Yeah.
So I think you're actually good now.
Oh, all right. We fixed the glitch.
Joey is in the other room right now, and I think we've addressed it.
Yeah, we just realized that the stream hadn't started yet because I'm an idiot.
Oh, so I was right.
Yeah,
okay.
You were right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Not that you were an idiot, just that I didn't start.
Well, no. Look, in this case,
I'm going to lay out on this one. I'm going to let you guys settle this between yourselves.
Joey's in the producer booth right now, just nodding and smiling accordingly. So.
All right. We've got a sports show, believe it or not. Between us talking about Tombstone and Wyatt Earp and Marvel movies, we will have a radio sports program today. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks, is going to join us coming up at 12:30.
Hey,
as we are down here in Autzen Stadium. No better person to bring us into the college football season than Jerry, and he's going to sit down with put the headsets on and have a conversation with us about the 2024 Oregon football season. I want to get his thoughts on Tombstone as well. I know he has thoughts on Tombstone. We'll also got a lot of college and NFL news and notes. The crazy part of yesterday was some names actually getting lopped off of NFL rosters and getting swooped up today. We got to some of them yesterday during yesterday's show as they were happening. But boy, some real surprising names getting cut and now trying to find new homes across the NFL. And list season, it hits you like a ton of bricks right before week one of the NFL in college football season. So we'll have to get listicle too. So we've got to, all of a sudden we have a ton that we need to get to on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm down here at Autzen Stadium. Danny, still back in the studios along with Russ, holding it down on this Wrestling Wednesday. Where we got to start this bad boy off? A big decision was made in the Steel City. This is Danny and Dusty on the Fan. I'm not sure how surprising this is to anyone, but the Pittsburgh Steelers have named Russell Wilson the starting quarterback for week one in Atlanta against the Falcons and Kirk Cousins. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, kind of a back and forth throughout the preseason, mainly because Russ's availability for the first couple of weeks, he just wasn't able to play. But I think after what everybody saw from Justin Fields, this seemed like the no-brainer that you go with the vet.
I mean, the thing I take away from this is broken, dysfunctional Russell Wilson is still better than Justin Fields. And that kind of tells you everything you need to know about where they actually are with their quarterbacks. It's not a good place. They're not. And you can say, well they'll probably shift to Justin Fields because there's, quote unquote, more potential there later in the season. But like, if you're going to do that, then why not do it now? Like, I don't understand the reasoning if you're going to make the switch eventually. Because the idea that somehow you'll be better today, but better with Russell Wilson, but better in the long haul with Justin Fields when they're both not good, it doesn't make any sense to me. My brain just cannot handle, this is like a double negative being a positive. It just doesn't, the math does not make sense.
Well, yeah, that goes back to the old adage, if you got two, you got none, right?
Yes.
And so you're going to go with the guy who is, I guess, less dangerous in the ways that it will hurt you. Maybe that's his new nickname, is Less Dangerous. but he is, in the fact that, what was the wide criticism of Russell Wilson in his time in Seattle, right?
Mr. Unlimited.
It was that he was a very good play-action passer, could push the ball down the field, get those big chunk plays, but he was risk-averse. And a lot of times for a quarterback, you want a quarterback who is risk-averse and doesn't get you in trouble by trying to force the ball in and throwing interceptions. But Russell Wilson was kind of on that extreme end of it, right? Where he wasn't throwing picks, but he was taking a lot of sacks. And I guess if you're Mike Tomlin, who's a defensive-minded head coach, it's better for you in your mind, right, to be able to punt the ball away than sudden change bring your defense out on the field. That is the reasoning that I can get to that point. But to what you're saying, Danny, is I agree in that it's not, neither one of them are a good option if that's the mental gymnastics that you're going to have to do to stick the landing on Russ being the guy right now and saying, well, you never know. Down the road, Justin Fields can be that guy.
The thing I take this in general is just kind of looking at the state of quarterbacks around the NFL and kind of the idea of which ones are on the most solid footing. Like, we know like who the top 10 quarterbacks are in the NFL. We talked about the quarterback tiers yesterday and kind of where things sit with once you get past the tier 2 guys, which is essentially, you know, your top 10. You get into that tier 3, those guys all felt like they're on solid ground, but you get in that tier 4 group and you start kind of going, yikes, I don't know. And even some of the tier 3 guys towards the bottom, you're like, I don't get it. Does this feel like the least stable quarterback position in the NFL right now?
Yeah, because I think in any of the other ones that we could talk about, whether it's Minnesota with Sam Darnold and you have J.J. McCarthy, one, J.J. is a rookie and hurt. So that kind of helps the, well, you know, we're going to roll out Sam Darnold anyway. In New England, at least you're selling that, and we talk about this a lot with the Trailblazers, right? Sell, you have that hopium the hope from the fan base that in New England you have Jacoby Brissett, but that's only because we're waiting for Drake May, and he's going to be the guy somewhere down the road. In Denver, it is can't be much worse than what we had last year, and we got a rookie in Bo Nix who has looked wildly efficient throughout the preseason, and everything that Sean Payton said he was going to be for us, he's going to be that guy. We all know this. We talked about this when Bo was named starter, right? He's going to go through his lumps. He is a rookie in the NFL where they are very well coached and everybody is the best player on their college team, right? Except for maybe if you went to Georgia. But you have, there will be a learning curve, but you have that hope of he's young. He can learn. We can go through this and we expect this. Pittsburgh is really the only area, the only place where you're like, man, we're in the dregs of it no matter what. I mean, even Seattle with Geno Smith being your number one, you're going, he went to a Pro Bowl. He went to a Pro Bowl for us. And we have Sam Howell who looked electric at times, right? I think you're right in that maybe your Vegas Raiders are the only other franchise that are kind of in this boat right now.
Maybe.
I'm sorry to say that, but at least your fan base is on, we got the plan, and the plan is to get the quarterback of the future next year. But that's not the mentality of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is, they've got a roster that's going to be good enough to go 9-8, 8-9, be right in the middle of the pack, because their defense is still going to be really good. They're still going to have a good run game, and they're going to win a lot of games, right? Your hope for your Raiders is you kind of send it in the side of the mountain this year, right?
Yes. I mean, that's kind of the idea, and that's what the Steelers have refused to do. And you look at every other team in the NFL. I mean, is there a team that hasn't done that, with the exception of the 49ers, who stumbled on it on literally their the literal last pick in the draft after, of course, getting all the way up to number three? So they have literally hit both extremes. But I mean, everybody wants to talk about how you can't tank in the NFL. Every single team, with the exception of the Patriots, in the past 30 years has had to do this. And even then, he replaced a quarterback that was drafted where?
Number one overall.
Okay. So it's like, this whole idea of like, oh, we can just kind of figure it out and maybe we can find value. Like, sure, that's fine. But at some point in time, like it's becoming so apparent that you have to. Now, whether or not you get it right, I think that's up for debate. But this whole, like, I would love for somebody like what the analytics community, whether it's, you know, PFF or any of the other groups, that to take the quarterback data, and they probably have this, over the last 50 years. Hell, let's just shorten it to 30, to like the passing era, and look at draft value for quarterbacks and then the actual winning components that came with patchwork quarterbacks. Quarterbacks that weren't a part of, or weren't supposed to be a part of the solution, as it were. Because if you are a Steelers fan and you are so deluded that you have gone full Chicago Bears and been like, no, Justin Fields, I can see it. Like, that's a level of copium that I just can't, like, you've watched this dude for 4 years be not good.
Yeah.
The list of guys in the history of the NFL, let alone modern passing era, who have done nothing in 4 years, you're like, I figured it out. And I think we're seeing a bit of that with Sam Darnold in Minnesota. This is year, what, six? Year seven?
Yeah.
And it's all because of draft value. Darnold being a top pick and Fields being, what, pick 11. You just see this start piling up, and it's just like, I can't wrap my head around it.
I know it hurts your brain. Vancouver Ford text line 503-864-6326. Your dollar goes further at Vancouver Ford. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them online, vancouverford.com. The New York Giants are in that boat, too, with Daniel Jones and Drew Lock, right? And it's not a fun boat to be in. It can seem very lonely at times, but I mean, we're going down and we can do that then. All right. The bottom three, quarterback situations, if you will, in the NFL, you can go Pittsburgh, Vegas, New York. Which one is the most desolate at this point?
Pittsburgh.
You think it's Pittsburgh?
Yeah, because they
because
they
you're
don't
not, you,
they don't have
you're
the
not
path to
be
it.
Good enough. Or you're not going to be bad enough.
Yeah,
right?
You don't have the path to it. I think that's the legitimate thing, in that the Giants, like, they'll play Daniel Jones and they're going to be terrible because he's very bad. He's just not a good quarterback, and that team is just so bereft of any actual talent on the offensive side outside of Neighbors. And the Raiders, like, it is what it is. Like, I don't care what Antonio Pierce does, they're going to suck. They're just not good. They'll be the little defense that could, where it's a bunch of guys that you've never heard of that end up making, like, probably it would not surprise me if the Raiders end up like a top 12 defense in the NFL. Like, it's weird as that is. It's like, well, it doesn't really make any sense, but like, you look at their roster defensively and you go, well, no one sucks, you know? And then you look at the offensive side and you go, wow, there's a lot of suck on this side of the ball. And in today's NFL, I don't think you can be that unless you have this overwhelming defense and being productive. And honestly, I hope they don't. I hope they don't. Yeah. Like, I genuinely hope they don't. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you probably should have done this last year, dummies.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you were saying that, I was going through, did you see ESPN had their list of the most of asking quarterbacks or asking players in the NFL about quarterbacks, where the top quarterbacks, what rookie's going to have the best career, who's the most overrated and underrated quarterbacks in the NFL. And as you were talking about that, Justin Herbert was fourth on the most overrated, but he was also fifth on the most underrated.
It's a weird spot to be.
Isn't that a weird spot?
Yeah. I think we need to talk about this a little bit later in the show. This is it's a squirrel moment, but it's also, I think, kind of poignant. On my way in today, I don't know what wild hair just crawled up my back, but Brandon Roy popped into my head. And I tweeted out the general idea of, he was the perfect encapsulation in the NBA of That Boy Nice, where it was the perfect combination of aesthetically pleasing, like the quote unquote real hooper, while also being a super high end talent. And I was actually kind of wondering, like, does that exist in the NFL? Like, is there somebody in the NFL that you just has like a near universal approval rating, where you're just like, they're really fun to watch. I don't care what team they play for. Like, it just feels like they don't necessarily have to be the best player on the planet, but there's
like,
just
it would have been Larry Fitzgerald at a time.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. Like, universal approval rating. Every player, like, nobody's calling him underrated. Nobody's calling him overrated. They're just going rated. But it's what they do is beautiful, but it's also even for like the real, like, analytics is the devil. Like, he's a real hooper. He's a real baller. He's a real player. Like, because I feel like Herbert is, to an extent, one of those guys, but he has his detractors. So even if he's on the list, he doesn't make the cut, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, just somebody.
Well, I think it's Patrick Mahomes, because he's just far and away the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yeah, but he has his detractors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
those people need to pipe down a little bit.
They're dumb.
The only reason why he has his detractors is because they're just people that don't like the best.
Or,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that. Well, that and his wife and his brother.
Well, that too.
I think those are probably the other thing. And they think, like, what? Because I think Herbert does kind of fall on that, because he throws like one of the best balls you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And when it leaves his hand, it just looks beautiful.
I remember telling Andrew Nemec when Justin Herbert was a junior. I think. No, it was his senior year. It was his senior because he got hurt his junior year. When he was a senior at Sheldon High School, he threw a ball at Providence Park, and I looked over at Nemec and I said, that is the most beautiful football I've ever seen a high school quarterback throw. It was a crossing route and hit a crosser in the middle of the end zone, and it was like the nose was down. It was on a line, and his receiver had no other option but to catch that ball. He could not drop it. And I just looked at Nemec and said, that was incredible. And I am with you. There's something about his spiral that you just go, yeah, that's pretty, man. He does throw a beautiful football.
But you know what I mean?
I have a couple of guys that popped into mind. But what we need to do right now is we need to class this show up a bit. We're going to class the show up. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks, he's going to join me in the booth at Autzen Stadium next. First, you got Jeff Rust with the SportsCenter update. Welcome back into Danny and Dusty. I'm live at Autzen Stadium right now, looking out over the valley, and a beautiful day down here in Eugene, Oregon. And we are joined with Danny back in the studio up in Portland. We are joined now by a man who usually gets to set the scene, but I get to take it over for today. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks. How you doing?
I feel a little uncomfortable sitting this close to you. So I'm going to widen out just a little bit here.
I mean, is that the real reason why you send me all the way down to the sidelines for these games?
Well, just saying, yeah, kind of. We voted on it.
Don't feel bad, Jerry. I literally sit on the other side of an enormous table up here. So trust me. I get it.
All right. Well, here we are. It's finally game week for the Oregon Ducks. This offseason, it was short because there was a Fiesta Bowl, but it's also seemed like it's taken forever because of the hype and the excitement surrounding this team. Can you remember a time where there has been this much excitement heading into a season?
You know, maybe Marcus Mariota's last year when we knew that Oregon had a pretty good team and a chance to get to the national championship game. He was the guy that could get you there, and we could sort of sense that. I think Dennis Dixon hit the year that we lost Dennis. We knew midway through the season, not preseason going into, but once that season started, we realized here's a guy that has a great chance to win the Heisman if we could win the national title. So there were those times when you felt that excitement, but not – maybe not as early as we are this year with the change to the Big Ten and all that's, you know, the nation's talking about Oregon and the Big Ten and Ohio State and the Big Ten and the Ducks and the Big Ten. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jerry, one of the things that I've kind of wondered sitting from the outside looking in, you've been there for a long time. You've seen the different iterations of this program. And for me, my criticism of Oregon has always been that they just didn't have the horses in the trenches to be on this the level of saying that we are a national title competitor. That feels like, and it looks like, it has changed over the last couple of years, and they can put those horses on the front of the cart now and go, no, we're here with everybody else. What has that transition been like, kind of watching that ascension of, hey, we can do it every couple of years, to, no, we're here year after year after year now?
Well, we knew. Jorgie and I talked about, you know, the pieces that were missing, or maybe not pieces that were missing, but the depth that did not allow Oregon to continue through a season when they would start well and then suffer some injuries, and then you didn't have those backups, that depth. But I remember playing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, and I can't remember what year it was, but we matched up pretty well. Linebackers were about the same size, both sides. But Ohio State's linebackers were not only big, they were faster than all get out. We couldn't compete with that. So there were areas or levels, as you say, that Oregon wasn't quite at year after year. And we've seen it develop now. I think Mario Cristobal really should get credit for bringing in some bigger, stronger, faster guys and really got Oregon up to a different level. And now Dan Lanning has really topped that. And so now you're seeing across the board starters that can compete at that level with some of the bigger schools. We're talking about Alabama, Ohio State, putting guys in the NFL on the trenches. Oregon's doing that now. And so, yeah, it's changed. And we can see when we weren't there, and we've seen them slowly gain ground and get to a point where we believe they are there now.
With hype, do you get a little, at times, do you get a little cautious, like too many people are talking about the Ducks?
Yeah, I do. I find myself doing that. I mean, I got to dial myself back because you watch practice and you talk to the coaches and you read the headlines and you listen to ESPN. It's like, yeah, that's us. That's what we're going to do, you know? And it's, wait a minute. Okay, because I'll find myself starting to talk like that with people, with fans. Yeah. And it's like, and now I've learned to say, that all said, everything I just said, but now you got to prove it, okay? Haven't proved a thing yet. Got to prove it.
Jerry, there's a ton of transfers into Oregon this year with two very prominent names in Evan and Dylan. Outside of those guys, who has just kind of popped on the scene through practice, through camps, that you've been like, oh, this looks a little different?
Well, it's almost a little difficult to answer that question. One, I'm not supposed to talk about what I see in practice. Yeah.
They got, I think they got a sniper.
Is that gag order?
Up there, right?
Yeah. But But the real reason is it used to be that you would see a kid coming in like Jonathan Stewart or Royce Freeman or somebody like that, and they just stood out. Mm. You just knew this guy's different, and they would run through people, around people, and past people. And now you're not seeing that guy. I mean, sure, there are a couple of guys that stand out, but the reason you aren't seeing that one or two guys that are running circles around people and are standouts is because there are more standouts. Mm. So you've got not too long past, you had like maybe a 5-star, maybe a 4-star, maybe a couple of 4-stars and 3-stars. Now you've got 4s and 5-stars in, and so you don't have the guys that separate themselves and make you go, oh, wow. You're seeing that more as a team or a group of guys rather than one or two individuals.
And I think that kind of goes to, like, it has to be a very specific skill set that makes that guy pop now, and that's the credit to the roster building that you're talking about. Because I remember last year the buzz around Tez Johnson was, this guy's just different.
Yeah.
And then we saw it took him a while to kind of ramp up and get up to speed with the offense and terminology and such. But by the end of the year, we were watching Tez Johnson, and that twitchiness, that speed, it's completely different than anybody on the field.
And those guys like Tez and Evan Stewart, same thing. They make the guys who are around them so much better because they're competing with guys that are a level above them or were expected to be a level above them, and they're competing with them, and it makes them better. So you're not seeing – I mean, Tez Johnson, I think, is a tremendous leader of the wideout groups because guys want to be like him. So they compete with him. They're trying to be better than him, which has made them better than they were, which is maybe kind of odd or hard to understand. But I'm impressed with Oregon's wide receiver group, running back group. I mean, when you start breaking down groups, there's a guy here and there that stand out. But I think the thing that's going to carry this team this year, Dusty, is that it's not just one or two or three stars or just a couple of guys here and there. I think it's the team in general that have raised their level of athleticism and quality.
Jerry, I want to keep you around here because I want to ask some questions. We were talking about those guys with the twitchiness and the guys that just stand out. And I want to get your thoughts on, you've seen a lot of University of Oregon football. Who have been the most explosive players, your favorite players to watch here at the University of Oregon? And we'll get that from Jerry as he joins us from Autzen Stadium on Danny and Dusty on 1080 The Fan. Danny and Dusty split show. We're going to be doing these Wednesdays as I'm down in Eugene for Ducks practices every Wednesday morning and bringing you Danny and Dusty in the afternoons. And we decided to bring on Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks. You've seen a lot of Oregon football, Jerry, and a lot of explosive players. Who are some of the guys that stick out to you as the game breakers that were just so much fun to call because you never knew when the game was going to turn on its head?
You know, I'm going to say one of the first guys, and you're going to say, he wasn't a game breaker. I mean, but he was, and that's Bill Musgrave.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Bill Musgrave wasn't one of those powerful runners. He didn't have the greatest speed in the world. He didn't have the greatest arm in the world. Bill Musgrave had a knack of knowing where everybody was at the right time and getting them the ball. He wouldn't get a fight in there like John Elway. He was just going to get him the ball. And then that very first game, go back to Colorado when they upset Colorado in Boulder, it was the beginning of something special. It's where we are, I think, in 2024. I think he started, but he was one of those guys. I think of I'll toss some names out. Jeremiah Johnson, I saw him at practice the other day. JJ had, to my mind, still the best straight arm as running back I've ever seen.
He came in right when Twitter had started, and almost instantly, Jeremiah's stiff arm became a Twitter account of its own that took on a life of its own.
It was a thing of beauty. It really was.
Just punishing.
Oh, yeah. Eric Castle. Played in the secondary along with, Ashland High School.
Chad Cota.
Chad Cota. Those guys laid the lumber. I mean, fun watching them come up and hit somebody. And and you know, knock the ball loose or do something like that. I think what we were just talking about, Royce Freeman. Jonathan Stewart is one of the first guys that I remember when fall camp started. He came in as a freshman. And we looked at him, and his legs were bigger than my body. And and we kind of looked at him and went, holy cow, why didn't he go straight to the NFL? Yeah. And that's the way he played, too. He was a specimen. I think watching Joey Harrington, Keenan Howery, it's tough to go down a list and leave somebody out. But those are the names that pop out. Another one is Haloti Ngata.
Oh,
Haloti Ngata was the anchor that every team in America wishes they had every year.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a double-team guy. He was going to have to be double-teamed, which made the whole defense better. So.
Oh, so he was so big that they would double-team him, and he still wouldn't move an inch.
Oh, no. Yeah. He was a rock.
Anchor in the middle. And then he got to the NFL, and it was like, well, it's
same thing.
Not just a Pac-10 problem. It's a problem of humans trying to move Haloti Ngata.
Yeah. And he was so soft-spoken that you could sit this close to him and not hear what he was saying because he was so humbled and very, very soft-voiced. Now, there were so many of them, guys. I mean, it's hard to stop talking about the list.
Jerry, in that same vein, you know, unfortunately, it's the end of the Pac-12, but it's the beginning of the Big Ten for Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA. There's going to be that kind of line to draw where those four teams have some shared history that they can bring with them. But when you're going into that conference, what are the things that you're kind of hoping to experience or to see, or what are the things that you're looking forward to as you know you move into a new conference covering this team?
Well, one of the things I'm looking forward to, it may seem odd, but I want to see USC, UCLA, and Washington continue to have success, along with Oregon, to be able to put it in the Big Ten and have the rest of the nation finally say, holy cow, they play football on the West Coast. I think those four teams being in the Big Ten, if they can be successful on a regular basis, I think will open a lot more eyes across the nation. I'm looking forward to that. And then, obviously, the venues, the history, the tradition, rich Big Ten. I mean, going back to Ohio State again, back to Michigan, I've been to Illinois, going to Penn State. I mean, these are venues and teams that have watched for years and years and thought were the hotbed of college football, even though we're the West Coast Pac-12, that was more college football.
What place are you most looking forward to go this year? Because you got the Rose Bowl to start it off. You talk about venues. The Rose Bowl to start it off.
Yeah.
Then West Lafayette, Indiana, Purdue with the big drum that they bring out, the big house in Michigan, and then Madison, Wisconsin, and also Research Stadium, but that's a familiar place. Actually, you haven't been there since the new stadium opened.
No, looking forward to it.
Okay, so those are the five right there.
Easy answer for me, because we've been there, and their fans are much like Oregon fans. It's one of the toughest places to play, and that's Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, when they get jump going, that place vibrates.
Yeah.
And it's a great college atmosphere. And so, I love Camp Randall is special.
Hey, they don't – do any of these places throw things at sideline reporters? Because Texas Tech was not my favorite place to go and get water bottles and tortillas thrown at me for 3.5 hours.
Well, have you done a game down at Arizona State recently?
No.
Okay.
No. Last year was the one – after Texas Tech, I was like, that Arizona State, I can't do it this year.
Oh, losses. Just tortillas. Water bottles are a little dangerous, though. Tortillas, I can eat a tortilla.
I can send some cheese to some folks in Wisconsin and have them throw that
at you. There you go. Okay.
Great. Yeah. Okay, can't wait for that.
Late in the year, we'll probably have some snowballs somewhere because it's going to be cold.
That's right. Mid-November, November 16th in Madison, Wisconsin.
Man.
God, I'm not built for the cold
either. Frozen tundra.
You going to be on that sideline wearing one of those puffers? Is that what we're going to get from you?
I'm going to look like the Michelin man on the sideline down there. Are you kidding me?
Go find George Costanza's jacket.
Yeah, I'm going to look like the little brother from Christmas Story.
Doing out the
there.
Star waddle.
Yeah. They're going to roll me out to the sidelines and I'm just going to prop me up. I might wear the duck costume. I don't know.
That'd keep you warm.
They would.
You have two pair of long underwear and a puffer coat, and it'll be a 75 degree day.
Exactly. Historically speaking, we've gone through go to the Big Ten. That's going to be an awesome change, and it'll be very welcome. It's been pretty crazy to think of how much more publicity Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA have gotten just by this move, yeah. right? Everybody yeah. wanted to say the East Coast bias wasn't real. I think one thing that we have found quite clear is that it's real because you go to the that conference and it's like, all right, now they're playing big boy football. Are you going to have your eye on any of the other former Pac-12 teams that, you're going to be keeping tabs on?
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of watch Cal, you know, with Wilcox there and some of the guys that, you know, played for Oregon and coached at Oregon.
ACC football.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. That is mind-boggling to go from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast, come back and play, and then go back. No, it's just it doesn't make a lot of sense. That's got to change in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Cal, I'll be interested in watching Cal. I'm kind of curious to see really what happens with Oregon State and Washington State.
Yep.
I just thought that was so wrong that they did not end up in a Power 5 conference somewhere. They deserve to be. And so for the next couple of years, I want to watch what they do and how that all plays out. I hope that they are successful and get where they need to be and where they should be. Other than that, I don't care about anybody else.
Perfect.
Yeah, it'd be fun to watch Arizona and Arizona State, but we don't have to play them. Glad we don't have to go to Utah anymore.
Yeah, see, and that was the one. I have grown such an appreciation for Utah in their time in the Pac-12.
I respect them very much.
Yeah, and Kyle Whittingham seems like a guy who is a great guy who kind of does it the right way.
Yeah,
and his program is it's amazing to see. They went from the Mountain West to the Pac-12 and didn't blink. They were ready for the challenge.
I hated playing there because their fans were great.
Yep.
And that was a tough, tough game. And I'm glad we don't have to play them anymore. You know, okay, maybe they'll make it in the 12-team playoff, and we'll make it in the 12-team playoff. That would be great.
That'd
I
be
hope
awesome.
That happens. Okay, I hope that several pre-Pac-12 teams, as well as several of the Big Ten teams, end up all in the 12-team playoff, and it would be like the Pac-10 over again. Pac-12 over again.
Do you think that that's what would get the Pac-12 finally some credit? Is it's finally gone and it's like, all right, so you got the Big 12 champ in Utah. You have a Big 10 team in Oregon. You can get another bid from, you know, the ACC. I don't know if that's going to be happening with Cal or Stanford this year, but you could get one feasibly.
No, I mean, I think Oregon, USC, I think Utah, certainly. I don't know. Arizona has got a chance.
Yeah, Arizona does.
Got a chance. So even Arizona State, yeah, it could happen. I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be.
It'd be awesome. All right.
You ready for this game yet? I mean,
we got Idaho this week. What do you know about the Vandals yet?
Vandals, pretty good ball club. I mean, they lost most of their offense, but most of their defense comes back. They're a good program. It's like, I'm going to say this about everybody Oregon plays this year. Be aware of your opponent, but be more aware and concerned about your own team.
Yeah.
No, don't beat yourself. So if you could let Idaho beat you, or you can play your game and make them have to try to beat you, and that's going to be a tough thing to do. But Idaho's. I love playing Idaho. I love playing Portland State. I love playing those teams that come to Oregon.
And that was – I mean, this is the hard part for these FCS schools because Idaho is kind of the poster child for it. Coach Eck down there did an insanely good job of building up a program to be a quarterfinal team in the FCS playoffs a year ago.
Very quickly.
And then the transfer portal opens up, and their quarterback goes, and now he's starting at Oregon State, and Javonte McCoy, their running back, who's a 1,000-yard rusher, he hits the portal. He's going to be playing a lot of snaps for the University of Utah. And you go, we're back at square one again and putting in all of that work to build up to that point. It's kind of weird as I've been looking at Idaho and doing the prep, it's like a lot of the guys that should be back and making that one more run that we've become accustomed to, they've taken off and they go to another place, and it's a credit to the staff of Idaho and also those guys for saying I can go to the Power Five, but it takes away from the FCS experience a little bit.
Well, I think, and you got to be aware that the reason they were good enough to go and make that step up on the portal is because he brought them in.
Yep.
You know, he developed. So I think he's a great recruiter. I think he's a great developer of talent. So I expect the guys that he did bring in off the portal and the guys who were freshmen or sophomores last year are going to be improved. So I think he is still going to have a team that was – I'm going to say just as good as they were last year.
Yeah. And the pride of Lake Oswego, Jack Lane.
How about that?
Playing quarterback for the Vandals.
He's going to play at Autzen Stadium.
Jerry, thank you so much for the time, man. I appreciate it. We're going to have to do this more Wednesdays when I'm coming down here.
I'm always here. I'd be happy to do it.
You live here, right?
Thrill. Yeah, I live here. Sleeping bag right over in the corner over there. Yeah, I got the bathroom down the hall. There's no food up here. That's the only problem.
Stale popcorn.
No food, and unfortunately, you're parked closer to Dusty.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Jerry.
All right, we get to hour number two. Let's get back to the NFL a little bit as roster moves, roster cuts made across the NFL. Some surprises that popped up. This is Danny and Dusty on The Fan.